This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. And in the spirit of an enlightened future, TrekFan is absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
About a standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take a seat.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network, and with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really good.
I saw that you watched the Lego movie yesterday.
I did.
Yeah.
It was the greatest thing.
Oh, okay. The greatest thing, huh? Had you seen it before?
No. I had waited. I didn't see it in theaters, so I waited until I was going to wait for home video, and some friends of ours who have kids got it on digital, and so they invited us over to watch it with them, and he's really big Lego fan. They flipped out at all the Legos that I have at my house when they came over, and so they were really excited to show it to me, and they were quoting along and stuff and singing and dancing and having a really good time. So it's a good audience to watch it with.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I was saying on Twitter when I saw that, I'm like, you should have taken the kids to see 22 Jump Street, since it's from the same directors and everything. I think that would have made a good double feature. They probably would have liked it.
I don't think so.
No?
Not the particular audience. The toddler especially.
No?
I don't think he would have done very well.
Oh, well. They're missing out. But whatever.
Well, we're not talking about the Lego movie today. But we're also not really talking about TOS today. We're talking about the spinoffs. But not the spinoffs you're thinking of. Mike, I've been intrigued by this since you said that you had a list of spinoffs of the original series that you probably don't think are spinoffs of the original series.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of my big things is continuity and shared continuities and everything like that. And a lot of that stems from my love for Star Trek and the idea that, you know, this is like a huge universe with 730-something hours of programming. So I've always been fascinated by this idea. You know, I mean, part of it comes from reading comics, and you know, all of the publishers tend to put their properties into the same continuity, and then you know, mm-hmm. you see that it kind of like spilled over into other things that I've been very fond of, like let's say Kevin Smith movies. You know, there's the Viewisk universe and stuff like that. And it's a very geeky thing. You know, we all love to make these connections and see how it all fits together. And because of that, I'm always on the lookout for these things. You know, I'm always connecting the dots and seeing how it all fits together. And mm-hmm. I've noticed that there are a ton of movies. If you connect enough dots, there are a ton of movies and TV shows which take place in Star Trek continuity. You know, a lot of them directly referencing things from the original series, well, some of them anyway, and then going on from there. So,
okay.
So I thought maybe I could share a few with you today. There's basically three groups. Okay, there's three things which are connected directly to Star Trek, which from there you can connect other things. Okay.
Okay, so these are going to be things that take place, in your opinion, in the Star Trek universe, in the past or in the far future.
Sure,
or...
sure. In my opinion, I guess. But it's there on screen. It's very obvious. I will show you. There's no denying it. It's there. Okay.
Don't tell me what I saw. I saw it with my own eyes.
Now, in order to give credit where credit's due, a lot of these connections were compiled by this amazing website called Pubala.com, which was a big thing back in the day. You know, unfortunately, they haven't updated their website in over 2 years, which is very upsetting. But back in the day, they would compile lists of all just television crossovers. So they didn't even get into movies, which, you know, there's a lot of these things which are connected through movie spinoffs or whatever. They were just focused on the television, and they had like groups, you know, where some of the groups were huge because you have characters like, let's say, Detective Munch from Homicide, who later became a regular on Law and Order SVU or something like that. Then you get all the Law and Order shows, and then all the various crossovers that they've had. He shows up on The Wire. He shows up on The Simpsons, The X-Files. And then it's like, oh, okay, so that means that The X-Files takes place in Arrested Development continuity, you know? I mean, that is so there's right. these things, you know, and Star Trek itself wasn't really connected to much in there at the time, but now it is, and there's a lot more connections than... So Pubala, got to credit them for sort of getting the ball rolling on this thing. There was also a very interesting article from Geek Magazine about a year ago.
Which, Robert Meyer Burnett's Geek Magazine?
I think it's more Mark Altman's Geek Magazine. I guess they're pretty much the same person, right?
No. I guess.
Yeah, but yes, that Geek Magazine. It was an article written by a guy named Scott Fraser.
Okay.
And there's a few other things here. Then there's a lot of stuff which I kind of put together, you know, from various interviews and stuff. Nothing revolutionary. It's not like I came up with any of these things. It's all stuff that's there. It's just you got to look for it. So
okay. So first off, this article takes place in Free Enterprise continuity because of Geek Magazine.
Yes, it does. So yeah.
So we take place in Free Enterprise universe.
Right, which means then that we also take place in the Dodgeball universe and Fanboys universe and Festival in Cannes universe, because all of those are part of what I like to call the Shatnerverse, which is the universe in which William Shatner plays himself, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, the first one is just a single one-off thing, which is very strange, which I would have never been aware of, and someone submitted it to Pubala, and they did a story on it, and it doesn't really connect to much more than this, but you ever watch Knight Rider?
Yes, I was in love with Knight Rider. I actually wrote my local TV station when they took these syndicated episodes off, like the repeats. I was like six. Mm-hmm. And I wrote my local TV station. I got a letter back saying, you know, sorry, you know, some deals don't go through all the way and we can't show the repeats anymore. Yes, I was in love with Knight Rider.
Okay, yeah, I didn't really watch it that much. I do remember when I was a really little kid watching it, and my uncle had like a black sports car.
Oh, yeah.
And it had like some sort of like voice thing where it was like, please fasten your seatbelt. You know, I'm like, oh, it's Kit, right?
Yes.
Okay. So then, as a Knight Rider fan, are you also a fan of Team Knight Rider?
No.
Okay.
I know that it exists, but it's one of those things that I found out years later after the internet. Like, I did not know this was a thing.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe it's time to check out Team Knight Rider, because there's an episode of Team Knight Rider in which a guy creates an earthquake machine and he's wreaking havoc by causing earthquakes or something.
Okay.
And to be fair, I haven't seen this episode. I've just read about it. Okay. And they do a cute little thing where I guess one of the characters from the show, his name is Trek. Okay. Whatever. And he was involved with the creation of this earthquake making machine. And because of that, he gets involved in, you know, trying to stop it and everything. And this, you got to keep in mind, this show aired in like 97, 98. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, His mentor, okay, the guy who actually created the earthquake machine, was a scientist named Jackson Roykirk.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Nice.
Jackson Roykirk, of course, is the scientist who created
Nomad.
Nomad, right? And that was in 2020. So you got to figure this is early on in his career. He's like, earthquakes. That's interesting. Let me try doing that. Doesn't go so well. So then he's like, okay, maybe I should shift my my field of expertise into artificial intelligence, something along those lines. You know?
Space probes. Okay.
Right. But I mean, surely, I mean, it fits. You know, same time period and everything. How many Jackson Roykirks are there? You know?
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, same profession. So that means that Knight Rider, since Knight Rider is a spinoff of, or since Team Knight Rider was a spinoff of Knight Rider, then that means Knight Rider takes place in Star Trek continuity too.
I love it. So far, I'm with you 100%. This makes my day.
Okay. All right. So now let's move on to the second one. Now, this is a very obvious one, which everyone who has seen the movie knows because it's the very first thing you see in the movie. And it's one of my all-time favorite movies, Kill Bill.
Yes. Just rewatched it the other day.
Really?
Yes.
It's awesome, right?
It's so incredible.
It is.
I just was like, Jessica wasn't really doing anything, and she's like, just pick something to watch. And so I was just like, we'll watch the beginning of Kill Bill. 4 hours later, we watched both of them, and I was like, oh, okay. So that happened.
That's the way it works, because it's Kill Bill, and it's awesome. And what's the very first thing you see in Kill Bill?
The best title card ever created. Revenge is a dish best served cold. Old Klingon proverb.
Old Klingon proverb. It's not attributed to anything else. It's not attributed to Dangerous Liaisons or whatever it was that it came from or any of that stuff. It's Old Klingon proverb. Okay? Not Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. It's just Old Klingon proverb. Okay? And some people might say, oh, that's a little weak, you know? But the thing you got to keep in mind is Quentin Tarantino's take on movie universes and shared continuities and everything like that. And that's going to lead to a bunch of other things here. So Kill Bill, I'm going to say that right there means that Kill Bill takes place in Star Trek continuity. Okay?
Okay.
Kill Bill is in the movie universe. Okay? Quentin Tarantino's movie universe. For those people who don't know, there are two Tarantino universes. There's the movie universe and the movie universe. The movie universe is the ones which are a bit more grounded in reality, like Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, that kind of thing. The movie universe are the ones which are a little more out there, like From Dusk Till Dawn, Death Proof, and Kill Bill, okay? The movie movies are the movies that... Okay, let me rephrase that.
No, I read about this.
Okay, all right, go for it.
That Kill Bill, theoretically, Uma Thurman's character in Pulp Fiction, right, was an actor. So Kill Bill, it was probably one of her early movies. So it's a movie that was made in this Reservoir Dogs Pulp Fiction universe.
I hadn't heard that, but that could definitely work.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that could work, because the movie universe, those movies are the movies that the people in the movie universe go to when they go to see movies.
Yes.
So Pulp Fiction characters would have gone to see Kill Bill. Okay? Apparently they would go to see Star Trek as well, because Star Trek would be in the movie universe, if you want to look at it that way.
But if Star Trek, the movies, were in the movie universe, and they went to see Star Trek movies, then... So Star Trek, the line is drawn, it doesn't take place in the Pulp Fiction universe. Pulp Fiction universe doesn't lead to Star Trek, but Kill Bill leads to Star Trek.
Right. Although there is like a whole meta thing here, which we can get into in a second. But, okay, some people will say, well, that's just something that some dude is saying, where's the evidence on screen? You know, sometimes you need that hard evidence on screen, right? Just like with Star Trek, you know, are the books canon? No. Is this thing that this creator said canon? Maybe not if it's not up on screen. But there are things up on screen which do connect these movies. For example, in Kill Bill, you've got Earl McGraw, right? Who shows up, who's played by Michael Parks. He shows up in From Dusk Till Dawn. That was his first appearance. obviously From Dusk Till Dawn is related to From Dusk Till Dawn 2, Texas Blood Money, and From Dusk Till Dawn 3, The Hangman's Daughter. But then McGraw also shows up in Planet Terror and Death Proof. And, of course, there's the trailer for Machete at the beginning of those movies, so they're connected. Mm-hmm. So there's Machete and Machete Kills. So all of those are in the same continuity, easily.
Right.
But then you've got other little things like Red Apple Cigarettes, which is Tarantino's brand. Those appear in Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Four Rooms, Jackie Brown. I'm probably missing a few. Okay.
Okay.
You've also got Big Kahuna Burgers, which appear in things like Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, obviously, is the big one. It's also in some stuff that you may not think, like The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl in 3D. So Shark Boy and Lava Girl definitely fits into Pulp Fiction continuity. Well, maybe it's the movie universe. So definitely it fits into Kill Bill continuity. And by extension, Star Trek continuity. But then there's other things. Like, now I don't remember how many of these actually have them, but there are some weird character connections and stuff. Like, Inglourious Basterds, one of the characters from that is the grandfather of one of the characters from, I think, True Romance. And True Romance is connected because they mention Alabama, who is played by Patricia Arquette, in Reservoir Dogs. Okay?
Okay.
And then there's Natural Born Killers, you know, makes a reference and everything like that. And Django Unchained as well. You know, they're all connected. Django Unchained leads to Shaft because Kerry Washington's character is like the great-great-great-grandmother of Shaft. Her name is like, I forget her first name, but it's something-something Von Shaft. So the idea is that, you know, her great-great-great-grandson is Shaft, which, by the way, was written by John D.F. Black, who was a producer on the original series. So it makes sense, you know? I mean, obviously, when he was writing Shaft, he was like, I need to think about this in terms of Star Trek, you know, because one day it will all be connected, you know?
It just hasn't been written yet. I'm sure that was on the forefront of his mind. We should ask him.
Yeah, yeah. And then you also got kind of a very, very cool connection with Jackie Brown, where that was based on a book by Elmore Leonard, of course, and there was this character, Ray Nicolette, in there, who was played by Michael Keaton. And almost simultaneously, Steven Soderbergh was making another Elmore Leonard adaptation, this one of Out of Sight, which also features the character of Ray Nicolette, because just like Tarantino and Star Trek and everything, Elmore Leonard's books are all connected, okay?
Okay.
So two movies completely unrelated to each other, both of which have the same character, Ray Nicolette. Now, they didn't do a Quicksilver thing and be all, okay, oh, here's my Quicksilver, and oh, here's my Quicksilver, and even though, you know, everyone wants to see the same thing and these movies tie in together, we're not going to do that because we're owned by one company and you're owned by another company, and God forbid, you know? What they did was they were like, oh, you've got Ray Nicolette in your movie and you've got Ray Nicolette in there, and oh, Tarantino, you're using Michael Keaton? I wonder if that would work for my movie. So Tarantino said to Steven Soderbergh, who was directing Out of Sight, why don't you come over to my editing room? You can watch all of my footage with Michael Keaton and see whether or not that's the idea that you had for the character. And if it is, then you can cast Michael Keaton, and then we can both have Michael Keaton play the same character in these two movies, which are released like 8 months apart. And sure enough,
wow.
And that's what they did.
Cool.
So it's super cool. Yeah. So Out of Sight takes place in Star Trek continuity as well, which is great. Okay, so that's that. That takes care of pretty much the Tarantino universe. There's one little movie which can be left open to debate.
Okay.
Okay. Now, From Dusk Till Dawn obviously takes place in the movie universe, right?
And since vampires.
Right. And since the movie universe that's the movies that people in the movie universe watch, then that means that they're being made in the movie universe, right?
So you think that there's a Quentin Tarantino in the movie universe?
I think that there is. And I think, okay, and there's a movie called Full Tilt Boogie, which is about the making of From Dusk Till Dawn. I so say that this documentary
takes place in the movie universe.
Yes. Okay. So we'll just throw that in there too.
And the director just happens to look like the cleaner from Pulp Fiction. And
well, that's the other weird connection there. Okay, because the wolf, right, who is from Pulp Fiction, who Harvey Keitel plays in Pulp Fiction, he is a movie universe character. Okay, here's the thing. Let me go back. Characters from the movie universe can go to each other's movies, no problem. They can cross over. And characters from the movie universe can cross over in each other's movies, no problem. But characters from the movie universe cannot go into the movie universe and vice versa, with one exception. There's one exception. The wolf, Harvey Keitel's character from Pulp Fiction, he is a movie universe character living in the movie universe, and he can go back and forth between the two universes whenever he wants.
Okay.
Why? I don't know. It's just what Tarantino has said.
What's crazy is I was going to poke a hole in your theory with, you know, well, in Inglourious Basterds, Hitler dies in that movie theater.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously in the Star Trek universe, with all the Hitler references and stuff, he didn't. But Inglourious Basterds takes place in the movie universe, not in the movie universe.
I think it's the movie universe.
You think Inglourious Basterds is movie?
I'm pretty sure because of that.
Okay.
But, I mean, just because there's Hitler references, I mean, in Star Trek, do they ever talk about how, like, Hitler died or how World War II ended?
Okay.
I mean, they never get into specifics. So.
All right. I'll give you that.
Okay.
All right. What else you got?
Okay. So here's the third one, which is like, those are, you know, things where you took elements from Star Trek and built on them.
Mm-hmm.
This is something where something was brought into Star Trek to make it part of something which already existed. Okay?
Okay.
And I think you're going to know what it is. It happened in 2009 with J.J. Abrams' movie.
Okay. I see where we're going.
Okay.
I think.
J.J. Abrams, his stuff takes place in a shared continuity, most of which is bonded by fake companies. There's a lot of them, you know, but the one that everyone points to is Slusho.
Right.
Slusho being the drink which you see people drinking in things like Alias, Cloverfield, Fringe, Super 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's also the thing that the bartender pushes on Uhura at the, you know, towards the start of Star Trek 09, right?
Okay.
She's like going through the whole thing. She's like, Cardassian Sunset, Budweiser Classic. And he's like, try the Slusho. And she's like, and a Slusho. All right. You know? So with that little reference, Star Trek fits into Alias continuity. Heroes, this thing shows up. Cloverfield, Fringe, and Super 8. Now, the guy on Geek talks about how since Fringe deals with, like, parallel timelines and alternate realities and everything, you could say that, you know, like it exists in one but not the other, and you can explain away a lot of problems through that, through the alternate realities.
Okay.
But, you know, whatever. There's that.
Like, explain Cloverfield away and that it's an alternate Fringe reality.
Right. Yeah, and that's why no one ever talks about it. Although it could exist. You never know. There's also the name of the company, which I forget. Now, this is kind of getting into, like, expanded universe stuff, right? Because it's not actually on the screen. But there is a company from Cloverfield called Tagruato Company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is apparently the company that the dude who they're having the going away party for is going to go work for in Japan in right. Cloverfield. And there's a whole big backstory with that.
Their satellites fell out of the sky or something and maybe woke the Cloverfield monster. I remember being involved in the ARG.
Yeah, there was something about that, something about the satellite thing. Now, apparently, according to all that stuff, Tagruato is the company that makes Slusho. And the key ingredient of Slusho is seabed nectar, which they get from, well, I guess the bottom of the sea, right?
Where big monsters would probably live.
Right. So they were mining this stuff. They were drilling for it. and that's what woke up the monster. Okay? That's right. the hidden backstory. But regardless, any of that, that doesn't matter. What matters is that, and it's very obvious, you can't help but see it. When the shuttlecraft are flying up to the Enterprise, you know, and you hear the awesome, you know, like theme from right. As there's when after that amazing shot of the shuttlecraft, you know, when they're flying and you see the city in the background, there's a skyscraper, and one of the skyscrapers has a very distinctive red logo on it, and that's the Taguato logo, right?
Wow.
So that's definitely Star Trek, because of JJ, definitely takes place in Alias, Cloverfield, Heroes, Fringe, and Super 8 continuity.
And I know that one of those had an Oceanic reference.
A lot of them had Oceanic references.
Which means that they take place in the Lost universe.
Yes, they do. There's a lot of other shows, which I never knew about, which also have Oceanic references, like Diagnosis Murder, LAX, which I guess makes sense. There was a show that lasted like 5 minutes. The War at Home, and JAG. Now, of course, JAG is a spinoff, right? Or was the other one a spinoff? Whatever. There's NCIS, right?
Yes, which is a spinoff of JAG.
JAG,
yes.
Right. And then there's also now NCIS Los Angeles, right?
Right.
And soon to be NCIS New Orleans, starring Scott Bakula.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez.
So, I don't know.
I hope that his last name is Archer.
Wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, if they don't do that,
great-grandfather,
what's wrong with them, right?
They have to know of all of these tangential references to one another.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows this stuff, right?
Right. Now, there's another one. Chuck.
Yes.
Chuck says, at one point, because there's the whole thing with the Intersect where he gets all this information, right? And at one point it says, like, Oceanic Flight 118 or whatever the flight was from Lost, you know.
Shot down by a missile.
Right. And then on Pubala, and I actually wrote a letter to them at one point saying.
I'm sure you did.
Because on Pubala.
I was going to suggest if you hadn't.
On Pubala, they say, like, well, that's just kind of a cute reference. That doesn't count because that's not
all
what really.
All of these are cute references. Let's be real here. There, what?
Well, maybe, maybe not. We shall see. But, you know, they're like, well, that doesn't really count because that contradicts what actually happened on the thing. You know? And I was like, oh,
but in an alternate universe?
Right. In an alternate universe, it would work. But the thing that Max pointed out, which makes perfect sense when you think about it, is later on in the show, it's revealed that a lot of the information in the Intersect, a lot of the information that they put into his head is inaccurate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a piece of inaccurate information that they got as a way of covering up what actually happened to the plane.
Ah.
So I say that
I can see that.
So Chuck does fit into the continuity. Scott Bakula.
Does Chuck make Star Trek references?
He does, but so do other things. You know, I mean, to me, that doesn't mean that there can't be a show called Star Trek. I mean, even Kill Bill, later on, she's like the woman who's dressed like a villain from Star Trek.
Like a villain from Star Trek, right. Okay.
But that's fine. You know, you can still do that. You can still have a show called Star Trek. Maybe that would explain some of the inconsistencies with Star Trek. I don't know. But, you know, Scott Bakula's on Chuck as well. So.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know what that means. But now there's another really, really cool connection, which I love, which may be my favorite connection here. In Chuck, there's an episode where they're doing like sort of a Die Hard ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
And Sergeant Al Powell shows up in the episode.
Oh, no.
And he's not even like, it's not just like, oh, that's the actor who played Sergeant Powell. That is Sergeant Al Powell, you know? They say it.
Oh, my God.
Or was it his cousin? I forget. It's been a while since I've seen it. But because of that, Die Hard definitely takes place in Star Trek continuity.
Okay, yes. I was going to say nothing could be cooler than Knight Rider, but yes, Die Hard taking place in Star Trek continuity. Wow.
Yeah, which of course also means, you know, Die Hard 2, 3, 4, 5. Are there 5 of those things now?
There are 5 of those things.
Yeah. And then now there's another one, which this might be a little iffy, but I'm going to say it takes place. Now, Die Hard was based on a book, which was part of a series of books about this dude.
Yes.
And one of the other books in that series was made as a movie with Frank Sinatra called The Detective.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same character, right? Some things were changed. But to me, it's just a character's reference. You know, I mean, since The Detective and the book that Die Hard was based on, just, I forget the name of it, because they're all based on books or articles and stuff, and they all have weird titles. Since those take place in the same continuity,
mm-hmm.
is there any reason to think that the movies don't?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Then I'm going to say The Detective, starring Frank Sinatra, which is a good movie, by the way, also takes place in Star Trek continuity. Oh, and that reminds me of one more. Air Force. Air Force, which was a World War II Air Force movie, directed uh-huh. by Howard Hawks, like that was made back in the 40s. There is the main character in that is a guy named Wanaki, who is absolutely 100% the character that Christopher Walken is talking about in Pulp Fiction. So Air Force is in the movie universe. So there's okay. that too. And I think that's about it. I can't think of any others. So here's what we've got so far. We got Knight Rider, Team Knight Rider, mm-hmm. Kill Bill, mm-hmm. From Dusk Till Dawn, and as well as 2 and 3, Planet Terror, Death Proof, Machete, Machete Kills, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Four Rooms, Jackie Brown, Air Force, Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, True Romance, Natural Born Killers, Full Tilt Boogie, The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl, Out of Sight, Shaft, Alias, Heroes, Cloverfield, Fringe, Super 8, Lost. Oh, yes. There was a show called Eli Stone.
Yes.
I don't really remember anything about it, but at one point...
He was a lawyer or something.
Right, yeah. And at one point, they do some banking at, like, Credit Dauphine, which is the bank, which is the front in Alias. So,
okay.
So Eli Stone gets added to the mix. Alias, Diagnosis, Murder, JAG, NCIS, as well as Los Angeles and New Orleans, LAX, Lost, The War at Home, Chuck, Die Hard, 1 through 5, and The Detective. Oh, and one more here. I don't know whether or not this counts, but Machete, right?
Okay.
That character, well, he always had the idea. Robert Rodriguez always had the idea to have, you know, Machete, you know, in a movie and have it be played by Danny Trejo and everything like that. He had this idea for years and never really was able to pull it off until, like, after giving up, after years of trying, he was just like, this is never going to happen. Well, I should just put Machete in a movie. And the movie that he put him in was Spy Kids, where he's the uncle.
Wait, what?
In Spy Kids, you know, their uncle is Uncle Machete, played by Danny Trejo. And his secret origin is that he was a spy and all this stuff. So I've watched.
I was going to say, is there any way we can tie Spy Kids 3D into Star Trek continuity with Ricardo Montalban? And you just did.
Yeah, you can. So there you go. There's that. But now, get ready for your mind to be blown, okay?
I'm not ready.
Okay.
I can't.
Spy Kids 2, there's a scene in that movie, right, where they're digging through, I don't remember because I've only seen it once, but I remember this scene vividly. They're like in like a room full of like treasure, you know, gold and everything. And they're
okay.
digging through these treasures trying to find things. And at
no.
one point, the girl picks up a thing and
no.
looks at it. And she's like, huh. And then she tosses it over her shoulder. The thing that she picks up is the fertility idol from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, God.
So that means that Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade and Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull all take place in Star Trek continuity. But now, here's the question. So we've got all of those things. All of those things. I don't even know how many that is. It's a lot.
That's a lot.
With the Slushoverse, which, granted, doesn't include Mission Impossible 3, which is very unfortunate, a lot of people are wondering, is J.J. going to stick Slusho into Star Wars? Because if he does, that means that Star Wars is a prequel to Star Trek.
I died. I just died.
Yep. So something to look forward to, something to watch out for. And I know there are a lot of people who are like, oh, well, you see R2-D2 flying by the thing in the new movie. That doesn't really count. That's right. Just like
the Millennium Falcon flying and attacking the Borg cube and first contact.
Right, that doesn't count. But if there's a Slusho in there, maybe that would explain where Slusho came from. You never know.
I'm going to... I actually, the font that they use in the Star Wars movies, Arubish, I can recognize a lot of the letters. I need to brush up on that before episode 7, because I'm sure that they'll walk into a bar or past a fast food place or something, and it'll say Slusho in the Star Wars font, and that's all we need.
Yep, yep. So something to think about. Something to think about. And if I missed anything, please, listeners, let me know.
Yes, don't hesitate to stretch credibility even further.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought about how all of those now tie into each other. The Slushoverse ties into the Quentin Tarantino movie-verse, which ties into... Right. Oh, geez.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy.
Wow. Well, thanks for that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. It's fun. So next time you're watching Raiders of the Lost Ark, just think about how somewhere out there... is, you know, like Captain Kirk's ancestors just doing their thing. Is it ancestors? Yes, ancestors.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, it was fun talking about random spinoffs of the original series today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I mean, like it's been talked about, you know, by Shatner that he's like, oh, I wanted to have the Enterprise find God or something like that. Well, how does that work?
You know, well, right.
You know, and it's like, well, it doesn't work the way you're doing it in this movie.
Earl Grey.
What if it was like a geeky tween boy? Data, where are you? They're just like, shut that up.
Mr. Data, I've got a problem.
The Ready Room.
When they finally do get rid of Decker, it's on Kirk's personal authority as captain of the Enterprise. And, like, it seems to me if you're, say, a captain in the U.S. Navy and an admiral takes command of your ship, you can't just, like, get rid of him because of your personal authority as captain of the ship.
The Orb.
And again, it's something, as you know, as we said before, the system is not set up to allow him to express that idea in any other way. But by the spectacle of this trial, which would presumably be impossible to hide, it is a way for him to... express this alternate viewpoint that maybe the morality of his society is under threat.
To the journey! We are here to talk to you about a very heavy-handed topic. This is kind of a dark area for us. No, I'm just kidding. We're talking about death in Voyager. Commentary, Trek Stars.
When they thaw out the pod people and they say, why, what year is it? And Data says, why, it's the Earth year 2364. I fell off my chair 47 times. It's like, they just put the... Oh, my... Okay.
Warp 5.
Archer doesn't close himself off to any possibility. He takes the evidence and comes to the best choice that he can. And that's not always easy for anyone, but that's the kind of person that Degra is, too.
Melodic Treks.
In fact, it had two versions of the theme, one which ran from seasons 1 to 3, and one which ran from season 4 onwards. Now, some people prefer the first music with the poignancy of the lone trumpet, others prefer the second incarnation.
Continuing mission.
If we were to sort of able to rewrite the canon, the uniforms we've got, they were the uniforms in the middle of Enterprise and TOS, but because they were designed during a time when peace wasn't as prosperous as it is in the original series, the uniforms did have a bit more of a militaristic look to them.
Literary Treks.
You know what I love about comics, though, sometimes, is what happened here in this panel with Beverly and Troy. Clearly, Troy's stunt double wandered into the scene.
I was going to say, is that Troy?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows to get in on the daily Trek talk. You find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. We actually have some fan feedback. We got a message from Thomas from New Jersey. And he says, I just listened to episode 6 with Dave Rossi about Remastered. I own DVDs of seasons 2 and 3, but original effects DVDs of season 1. I've been very curious of the project and loved the interview. Very informative as well as entertaining. Now I want the Blu-ray since there might be more content than the DVDs. I respect the creative talents applied in the 60s and usually prefer that. However, I'm amazed at the new process. Fun to hear about clash between Denise Okuda and Dave. I never saw the remastered version, and I don't own it, so can you tell me if the gravestone's name was ever changed to T, or if they stayed with R? Great show, and glad it's not gossipy. Wish there were more episode reviews, but I'm a new listener, and more are in the archives. Well done. Well, thank you, Thomas.
Yeah, thanks. It is still R.
Yes, they did decide that there were way too many shots to rotoscope out on their schedule, but I'm still looking for a fan edit to fix that. Because I'm sure the one fan with enough time and boredom can fix that for us.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty easy fix.
And as for episode reviews, you'll find them on the Ready Room. We try to keep Standard Orbit to topics and character studies and things like that, and leave the episode reviews to the Ready Room. Because there's plenty of episode review shows out there that just go through the whole series.
Yeah. But, and we show up on those on occasion, too. You're on, like, all of them, right?
Right. All yeah. The TOS ones.
Yeah.
Since 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, we also have another message from Brad in Virginia. And Brad says, hey, guys, geez, I didn't realize it'd been 30 years since The Search for Spock. Actually, in spite of it being an odd-numbered Trek movie, the scenes of stealing the Enterprise and the battle between the Enterprise and the Bird of Prey slash death of the Enterprise makes this almost even-numbered in quality. I like the description. I thought about what you said about bringing Spock back, sort of defanging Wrath of Khan, but I don't know if I agree with you. Yeah, the cynical part of my brain says that the studio decided the needs of the studio outweighed the needs of the fan. But given Spock's appearances in everything from TNG to being a major lichpin in the JJ-verse, this might have been the right decision. The other point I wanted to throw out there for you guys is that the whole thing with David and his use of proto-matter in the Genesis device. When I saw it, lo, those many years ago, the thought came to my mind that David was his father's son. In Wrath of Khan, when they were in the Genesis cave, and Kirk explaining how he beat the Kobayashi Maru test, David sneered and said he cheated. But I think that he wanted to show that David was James Kirk's son, because when it came right down to cases, he cheated too. Sure, it would have been easier to say that it was just the device was detonated in a nebula, but that would have not connected David and Kirk as clearly. Something to chew on. Thanks, guys, for the podcast. B.
Yeah, thanks. I agree that having Spock in the series since Wrath of Khan has been a good thing. I just wish that they would have found a better way to bring him back and maybe not brought him back as soon. And I do think that regardless of that, it still does defang Wrath of Khan. You know, even though we ended up getting a bunch of cool stuff, maybe it was for the good on the whole. I still think that if you just look at it in terms of Wrath of Khan itself, it does kind of mess it up. And the stuff about David, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. And it's an interesting idea.
I like it too.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd like to share your thoughts with us, just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
Well, you can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars with Max, and you can also find me on commentarytrekstars.com where I talk to Max and Brandon on commentary Trek Stars off topic, where we discuss pretty much whatever we want, like crossovers. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. And you can find me on various other shows around the network, like The Ready Room. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week, from classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World. Audible has something for everyone. I actually have something for everybody today.
All right, what is it?
A friend of mine wrote a book called The Secret History of Star Wars. I've contributed to his website. He's got another website, which is secrethistoryofstarwars.com, and he's got another website, savestarwars.com. I've contributed to both of those sites on my other love, Star Wars. So he wrote a book a few years ago called The Secret History of Star Wars, and it goes through George Lucas's writing process and his history and old interviews with him, kind of like what These Are the Voyages does, but for Star Wars. What's great is that his publisher allowed him not only to make a revision after like the making of Star Wars, the big official Renslor book came out, they allowed him to go back and make a second edition, clean up some stuff. People said that he rambled on a bit, repeated himself a lot. He managed to get it edited down much better, and they let him make an audiobook version. The audiobook is narrated by Josh Robert Thompson, who is a professional impressionist. He's the guy who does the currently does the voice of Jeff the Robot on Colin Ferguson's late night show.
Hmm.
And so he did his Morgan Freeman impression for Morgan Freeman on the Ferguson show. But he also does a very good George Lucas. And this is the best part. So you go through the book, and I'm listening to it right now. And you go through the book, and it's just, you know, just a guy reading the book. But when he gets to, and then George Lucas said, well, the thing is that people say, so all the direct quotes from people, he does an impression of that person. So Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas, Harrison Ford, he doesn't do like Carrie Fisher and stuff, which is disappointing to me. But there are times where he'll be in the middle of a quote and I'll lose track and just be like expecting to hear background noise or music from the interview that this was, you know, clipped from, forgetting that it's just an impressionist to begin with. And you could totally get it for free just by listening to Trek FM.
Yes.
So as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books or Star Wars books you've yet to read, or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And also, Trek Fan is a sponsor, a great way for you to take your love of Star Trek and put it into action. At Trek Fan, you'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Challenges include communications, engineering, and flight operations. There's internet relay chat, free books through Starfleet Academy, and much more. Best of all, it's absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org. Again, that's fm.trekfan.org. And remember to use this special URL so they know you heard about it here on Standard Orbit and Trek FM. Well, Mike, thanks again for presenting us with the unlikely spin-offs of Star Trek, or movies and TV shows that take place in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, you know. Oh, yeah, and there's a few others. There's Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise. They all take place in Star Trek continuity, too. Or so.
That's a stretch. Yeah, I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
It's tenuous, but whatever.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landry.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.